So this ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the fifth canto, 26th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled A Description of the Hellish Planets, completed in the Honolulu Temple, the Panchatattva, June 5th, 1975. So Srila Prabhupada hasn't commented on this verse. However, Prabhupada has added a supplementary note to this chapter, which we'll read and talk about. This is Prabhupada's supplementary note based upon the commentary of His Divine Grace Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So there's a supplementary note written by His Divine Grace Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada in his Gaudiya Bhashya. Its translation is as follows. Learned scholars who have full knowledge of all the Vedic scriptures agree that the incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are innumerable. These incarnations are classified into two divisions called Prabhava and Vaibhava. According to the scriptures, Prabhava incarnations are also classified in two divisions, those which are called eternal and those which are not vividly described. In this fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in chapters 3 through 6, there is a description of Rishabhadeva, but there is not an expanded description of his spiritual activities. Therefore, he is considered to belong to the second group of Prabhava incarnations. Interesting. In Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 3, verse 13, it is said, Ashtame marudevyam tu naver jato rukrumaha darshayan vartmadiranam sarvashrama namaskritam. Lord Vishnu appeared in the eighth incarnation as the son of Maharaj Nabi, the son of Agnidra, and his wife Merudevi. He showed the path of perfection, the Paramahamsa stage of life, which is worshipped by all the followers of Varnashrama Dharma. Rishabhadeva is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his body is spiritual Satchidananda Vigraha. Therefore, one might ask how it might be possible that he passed stool and urine. The Gaudiya Vedanta Acharya, Baladev Vidyabhushan, has replied in this question in his book known as Siddhanta Ratna. That's the first portion, text 65-68. Imperfect men call attention to Rishabhadeva's passing stool and urine as a subject matter for the study of the non-devotees, who do not understand the spiritual position of the transcendental body. In this fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, sixth chapter, text 11, the illusioned and bewildered state of the materialists of this age is fully described. Elsewhere in the fifth canto, in the fifth chapter, text 19, Rishabhadeva stated, Idam shariram mama durvi bhavyam. This body of mine is inconceivable for materialists. This is also confirmed by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita in the ninth chapter, text 11. Avasharanti mam mudha manushim dharmashtam param bhavam ajananto mama bhuta maheshwaram. Fools deride me when I descend in the human form. They do not know my transcendental nature and my supreme dominion over all that be. The human form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is extremely difficult to understand. And, in fact, for a common man, it is inconceivable. Therefore, Rishabhadeva has directly explained that his own body belongs to the spiritual platform. This being so, Rishabhadeva did not actually pass stool and urine. Even though he superficially seemed to pass stool and urine, that was also transcendental and cannot be imitated by any common man. It is also stated in Srimad Bhagavatam that the stool and urine of Rishabhadeva were full of transcendental fragrance. One may imitate Rishabhadeva, but he cannot imitate him by passing stool that is fragrant. The activities of Rishabhadeva, therefore, do not support the claims of a certain class of men known as Arhat, who sometimes advise that they are followers of Rishabhadeva. How can they be followers of Rishabhadeva while they act against the Vedic principles? Shukadeva Goswami has related that after hearing about the characteristics of Lord Rishabhadeva, the king of Konka, Venka, and Kutuka initiated a system of religious principles known as Arhat. These principles were not in accord with Vedic principles, and therefore they are called Vaishnava Dharma. The members of the Arhat community consider Rishabhadeva's activities material. However, Rishabhadeva is an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, he is on the transcendental platform and no one can compare to him. Rishabhadeva personally exhibited the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, the 5th canto, 6th chapter, text 8. Adhavana lastadvanam allelihana sahatena dadaha. At the conclusion of Rishabhadeva's pastimes, an entire forest and the Lord's body were burned to ashes in a great forest fire. In the same way, Rishabhadeva burned people's ignorance to ashes. He exhibited the characteristics of a Paramahansa in his instructions to his sons. The principles of the Arhat community, however, do not correspond to the teachings of Rishabhadeva. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan remarks that in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam there is another description of Rishabhadeva, but that Rishabhadeva is different from the one described in this canto. So, Om Ganat Mirandasha Gananjana Shlakaya Chapshur Unmiditam Nena Tasmai Shigurave Namaha. So basically, this 5th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam is dedicated to two main stories in the 5th canto. There's other stories, but the story is of Lord Rishabhadeva, and then also there's the description of the hellish planets or the punishments the living entities will endure. So here, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur is commenting on Lord Rishabhadeva, and this bears some talking about, because Rishabhadeva is an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he gave us many instructions and many good examples too. The first point is that we start with like the 5th canto, 5th chapter in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that Rishabhadeva is getting ready to leave his family situation at a very, actually quite young age. And when he's getting ready to leave his family situation, he's giving instructions to his sons. Does anyone know how many sons he had? How many sons did Rishabhadeva have? Anyone read? I'll give you Eksar. You know what that means? You don't know Hindi. Eksar?
61?
No, 100. He had 100 sons. So, yeah, that's Hindi. You speak Bengali, so it's different. So, Sara is 100. So, 8 was 1. So, 100, he had 100 sons. And those sons were quite famous. There were 9 who were extremely famous. They were known as the, no one knows, Navayogendras. Right? And then he had another 9 who took over the different Varshas. And then the other ones were Brahmas. So he had some Kshatriya sons, some transcendental sons, and some Brahminical sons. But the oldest son of Rishabhadeva was known as, anyone know? Starts with a B. Bart Maharaj. So when Rishabhadeva was getting ready to leave this, I leave the material, not really material activities, but the activities that he was doing as a king. He gave instructions to his 100 sons headed up by Bart Maharaj. And these instructions are quite useful for us. Of course, one of the primary instructions he gave is that basically don't try to enjoy this material world. And it's that's 555. Nayam deho deha vajrami loke kashtam kamam arete vidbhujam ye. Tapo divyam putrapiyena sattvad shudya jyasmad brahma shokya vanantam. You know the verse? It's a very famous verse. Prabhupada would quote it. I'm not that often, but he would quote it. Nayam deho deha vajrami loke. My dear sons, you've achieved something that's very rare, which is this human form of life. Kashtam kamam arhate vidbhujam ye. But you shouldn't act like the stool eaters. That means pigs. You shouldn't simply dedicate your lives to eating, sleeping, mating, defending, but you should engage tapo divyam, putraka. My dear sons, putra, putraka, that means of the sons, my dear sons, you should engage in transcendental austerity, tapo divyam, putraka yena shatvam. Chudyad yasva brahmashokya, and in this way, brahmashokya tvaranta, you can enjoy real happiness or unlimited happiness. So that's one of the instructions he gave his 100 sons. Another instruction he gave his 100 sons, which is also interesting insofar as we're concerned, is that he told his sons to cooperate and work in cooperation with Bharat Maharaj. Now, this is also can be related to Srila Prabhupada's leaving this world. Of course, Prabhupada had something like somewhere between 5 and 10,000 sons and daughters. It's interesting that Prabhupada said he left his tiny family life in which he had, how many children did Prabhupada have? Like three, I think. Three. How, four? I think he had three. Three sons and a daughter? So he left, Prabhupada said he left his, I wouldn't say material, but he left his previous ashram, his previous family life, and in which he had children and a wife who didn't listen to him. Because that's normal. And then he got children, not a wife, of course, but children who did listen to him, were ready to sacrifice their very life. So Prabhupada was giving that example that when you renounce something for Krishna, it's not that you're the loser, you actually get much more. I'm not saying that you should all renounce your homes, but if we give up our sense gratification for pleasing Krishna, then we will enjoy Brahmashokya Chvanantam. So Prabhupada instructed his followers too, you should cooperate. Your love for me will be demonstrated by how you cooperate with each other. You know, love and trust, as they say. And those who were actually followers of Prabhupada, they remained within Prabhupada's society, cooperating and working under the jurisdiction of Prabhupada's management structure and spiritual structure, the GBC, you know, temple presence, etc., like that. And those who disobeyed that order, they left Prabhupada's society. And that Prabhupada considered that to becoming asara, or useless. Because like he commented on this in regard to the children of Advaitacharya. Advaitacharya had six children, three of whom followed the path of Advaitacharya, and three of whom deviated from the path of Advaitacharya. And so, of course, the primary one who followed Advaitacharya was named Achyutananda. He was the primary son. And there was also Gopal and other children. But Prabhupada said that one follows the authority, the spiritual master, then he's useful. And if one disobeys, in spite of making a big show of whatever he's doing, then he's useless. So we find this sometimes with some of Prabhupada's disciples, that they left Prabhupada's society. Of course, they may make propaganda, they were kicked out, but which isn't true. We actually don't kick out anybody from this country. Unless they're really weird, you know, unless someone is offering meat to the goddess Kali. I mean, you really have to be crazy to get kicked out of ISKCON. I mean, it's very rare. Prabhupada only kicked one person out of ISKCON during his whole pastimes. Person's name was Jamadagni. And he went to Prabhupada, because he was offending all the devotees, he went to Prabhupada, and he asked Prabhupada, you know, what is my duty in life? And Prabhupada said, your duty is to enjoy. Go out in the world and enjoy it. And he said, Prabhupada, what about my spiritual life? And Prabhupada said, you have no spiritual life. That's pretty heavy, isn't it?
Yeah.
So Prabhupada only kicked one person out. And we don't really kick people out of ISKCON unless they act in such weird ways. And even, even basic riffics, usually we don't kick out of ISKCON. You know, so it's not that we kick, but people make that propaganda. They say, well, I was kicked out of ISKCON, therefore I'm independent. But that's because they don't want to follow the order of His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. That's really, they're just making an excuse, I was kicked out. because they don't want to follow Prabhupada's management direction. Just like many of the followers of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur didn't want to follow the direction of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, which is to form a GVC and manage things cooperatively. And therefore, Prabhupada said, generally, they became Asara. And we see that the Gaudiya Math split up into so many different organizations, whereas ISKCON is unified. And we're all working together nicely. I mean, we have differences of opinion, sure. We're all human beings. But ultimately, we go along with what is decided. This is part of teamwork. I mean, if anyone is studying in the business world, you know, they have this thing called teamwork and even team building exercises like that. They do. This is very common.
Yeah.
Very, very common. In fact, even in Microsoft, there was one prominent person. Microsoft is a big computer company. You've heard of it before?
Yeah.
They make the Windows computer, Windows 7, yeah. Windows 8, and now they're making all sorts of different gadgets. And even they have a phone system. So there was one person who was the head of the division in Microsoft for the next iteration, that means the next version of Windows. And he was kicked out because he wasn't a team player. Even though he was so expert in everything, they actually kicked him out of Microsoft. So that's really the point, that if we want to accomplish anything, like Prabhupada said about the GBC, you know, individually you may make so many mistakes, you're fallible, but together you'll be able to push on the movement. You know, he trusted all of us working together like that. So that's teamwork. Just like several years ago, I went white water rafting. You ever heard of white water rafting before? You've heard of it. Actually, it's quite common now. If you go up to Rishikesh, you know where Rishikesh is?
Yeah.
In the mountains.
Yeah.
Then you will find Rishikesh and Haridwar. You'll find so many Western people doing white water rafting there. Did you know that?
Yeah.
It's filled with Western people. And I'm not saying that you should do that, but I'm just giving an example of teamwork. So one time I went white water rafting. I thought, you know, with the devotees. So we took a whole temple out. We actually took the whole temple out. We had two boats, and we went on the river. And we were going down the river. And the interesting thing about whitewater rafting is not that you just sit back and enjoy, you know, going over the different, what's called rapids.
Yeah.
You know what a rapid is? Rapid is when you got all these rocks, yeah, and the water is rushing over, and if you don't do things right, guess what happens? Fall away. You could die. You know, we have to wear helmets. Why do we have to wear helmets? Because if the boat falls over, it's not you're just in the water. You hit the rocks.
Yeah, hit the rocks.
And you can die. People die. So before going out, we were trained up to work as a team. And so to work as a team, we had two groups of devotees, one on the left side of the boat and the other one on the right side of the boat. And the captain of the boat, when he said, go right, then everybody on the right had to row. And when he said left, everyone on the left had to row. So we all had to really coordinate things as a team. It's not that individually I could think, oh, I don't want to row now. I just want to row in the opposite direction. I don't feel good about this. Because if you did that, the whole boat would collapse. So, of course, I thinking in a Krishna conscious way, told the captain, all right, when you want people to row on the right, say Chaitanya. And when you want people to row on the left, say Nitai. So he wasn't a devotee. But I trained him up before. Afterwards, he became a devotee. Because for 3 hours, he was saying, Chaitanya Nitai. This is the trick of, you know, anyone who chants Lord Chaitanya's name becomes a devotee. So he's going, Chaitanya, Chaitanya, come on, Chaitanya, Chaitanya, Nitai, 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 Nitai. And in this way, he came to the temple later on and joined the Hare Krishna movement. So you can make anyone a devotee by this particular trick. So, but the point is we all work together.
Yeah.
And in this way, we safely went down the river. And it was like 3 or 4 hours, and it was many dangerous things. You had to go over like cliffs, basically, or waterfalls, and nothing happened. In fact, we even were able to attack another boat and defeat it because we all worked together. Because this happened when you're doing whitewater rafting, you know, it's a recreational sport. So there were devotees on the other boat, and they didn't work together as well as we did. And so we attacked them. What do I mean by attacking them? Not only splashed them, we pulled them in the water. So the reason I'm telling that story is that to prove the point that if we work together, we can defeat the illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And if we don't work together with Chaitanya Nitai, you know, Chaitanya Nitai, and we all have, you know, like our own ideas, what we think is best for ourselves or whatever, then we're gonna get killed. We won't be able to defeat the enemy. So this is actually one of Rishabhadev's primary teachings. I mean, the point about the Jata Yoga, which Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur mentions, is not really a teaching for us. It's just to exhibit the renunciation of a Paramahamsa, which cannot be imitated. What is the renunciation of a Paramahamsa? Let's understand sannyas. When one first takes sannyas, there's the Abahudak, Kutichak, Paravijakacharya, and then finally there's the Paramahamsa. When one first takes sannyas, one is not very renounced, at least in the Varnashram system. Usually people would take sannyas from the household life, right?
Yeah.
There's brahmachari, grahastha, vanaprastha, sannyas. It was a gradual progression. So when one first takes sannyas in the Varnashram system, one is still attached to his wife's cooking. He can't figure out how to eat without his wife cooking for him. I mean, sometimes we find sannyasis, they can't figure out how to eat unless someone brings them the maha plate. So, just like I was recently at Govardhan, I was by myself and cooking for myself, and the devotee said, "How did you eat?" And I said, "I cooked." They said, "Wow, you know how to cook?" I said, "Yes." They can't believe this, sannyasi knows how to cook. And then I say, "I also know how to drive a car." "Wow, you know how to drive a car?" You know, they're like amazed. Amazed at a sannyasi. So, in the same way, the point I'm making is one shouldn't become dependent on the mercy of others. On the mercy of the guru, on the mercy of Krishna, yes. But if we become too dependent on others, it weakens one in spiritual life. So in the household life, one becomes very dependent on the wife cooking for them. You know, they go to work and they come back and the wife is smiling and brings the rotis and what else do you eat? Khichdi. What else? What else does your wife make for you? What? What sweets? Sweet rice. What else does your wife make?
Different sabjis.
Different sabjis, you know, 3 or 4 sabjis. And so, you know, come back and just, oh, it's so nice. So then it comes time when you're 55 or 60, you got to leave and you're thinking, how am I going to eat? I mean, you don't realize that the woods is full of, like, all sorts of things you can eat. Like there's berries and nuts, like my diet, basically. Berries and nuts and other things. But you're thinking, how am I going to eat? We need a stove. My wife needs a stove with 6 burners on it. You know, 6 burners. An oven, a microwave oven. Like even you see in the Brahmachari Ashram here, there's microwave ovens, which is extremely dangerous for your health.
Yeah.
You know, it actually can give you cancer if you stand within 10 feet of the microwave ovens.
Yeah, it'll be effective on that.
It's called dirty electricity. It actually creates problems, harmonics. Anyway, I'm not going to get into the description, the technical description. But anyway, so we're so attached to the tongue. So therefore, when one first takes sannyas, he lives at the outskirts of the same village, and his wife cooks for him, and his children bring the food to him. That's the first stage. And then after a while, he thinks, well, maybe this is not the best idea. Maybe I should become a little more renounced. And then he does a madhukari. I mean, he's still thinking of food, but then he just does it door to door. He goes and he says, "Oh, please give me one roti
And he goes to someone else's house, one roti. So he goes in 10 houses, he gets 10 rotis. Not that he gets 10 rotis in one house, but he gets one roti per house. And that's, he gets, gradually becomes more renounced. Then after a while, he figures, well, maybe Krishna is actually providing these things. So then he enters into the Parvajapacharya stage, in which he actually just preaches Krishna consciousness, travels widely, and then he understands Krishna will provide it. And he may ask for food, that's true. He may say, you know, was there any prasadam tonight? That's fine. But he's not making an extraneous endeavor. Jai Sri Sri Radha Radha Kanta, Gauranatai, Jagannath Baladev Subhadra. Extraneous endeavor means he's not like just going out and looking for food. He's depending on Krishna for it. And then finally, there's the Paramahansa stage, in which one doesn't even ask for food. If food comes, he doesn't tell people he's hungry or anything like that. If food comes, it's all right. And if it doesn't come, it's not. It's all right too. Just like Madhavendra Puri, when he went to Braj, and he was chanting, he never asked for food, and guess who brought him? Who brought him food? Does anyone know?
Krishna.
Yeah. Gopal.
Gopal
brought him food. He brought him milk. And he said, no one in my village fasts. And then Madhavendra Puri took it, and then he had that dream, and then in that dream Gopal revealed that he was hidden in the bushes. And then he got Gopal out, and that Gopal later became Natchi. He's a Natwar now. Anyway, so that's a different story. That's a different story. So so the point is, that's the Paramahansa stage, which cannot be imitated. If you try to imitate it, you'll go crazy. So therefore, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur is talking about a particular religion. Does anyone know what the name of that religion is? It's a Jain religion.
Jain?
Jain religion. He's talking about the Jain religion, which is based upon calculation of this imitation of Rishabhadev, done under the jurisdiction of someone named Arhat, who is a king or something like that. And also they have someone called Mahavir, who they follow, who engaged in imitating Lord Rishabhadev. And they think that this is one of the processes. You know, one of the things the Jains do, you know, they pull the hair. Did you know that? Yeah, well, that's a good thing, that they actually put this mask so they're not harming any living entities, although that's one thing. But they actually pull their eyebrows out sometimes. The real strict ones pull their eyebrows out. And the hair here, yeah. To engage in torturing the body. They think that they'll become renounced like that. Lord Rishabhadev did things like he just walked around naked, people were making fun of him, passing air and whatever in front of him. But he was already on the transcendental platform. It is not that by doing bodily austerities or pulling your hair out that you become Krishna conscious. In fact, in the Bhagavatam, you have Jatabharata making that point very clear. What does he say? Ruhuganai tat tapasadi ati, nachejya nirvapanat grahadva, nachandasa naiva jalagmi surya pada mahapada rishopishekam. It's a very important verse. He's talking to King Rahugana. He says, my dear King Rahugana, this is when he was carrying the palanquin of Rahugana. You know, this is like the third incarnation after Bharat Maharaj, because this is also part of the same story. He said, and Rahugana discovered that Jatabharata was a great devotee because Jatabharata was speaking philosophy in spite of being a palanquin carrier. He said, Rahuganai tat, my dear King Rahugana, tapasana yati, you're not going to become Krishna conscious by engaging in austerity. Nayati, nor by taking sannyas, nor by immersing yourself in ice cubes in the middle of the winter, nor by putting yourself in the middle of a flame in the summer, and where it's very hot in India. But only by taking the dust, without taking the dust of a pure devotee, no one will become detached, Krishna conscious, spiritually situated. So this is really the point. Not that we imitate Lord Rishabhadev, and think that we're going to become detached from this world. Actually, you become more attached because you'll be experiencing pain, or you'll be thinking you're such a great personality, you want everyone to admire you. I remember when I was a young brahmachari, I did some austerities, but basically I was thinking people will actually think I'm nice, or I'm great because I'm doing these austerities. Isn't it? Sometimes we do that. As a young brahmachari, I don't do that anymore. But when I was a new brahmachari, you see brahmacharis doing these things, and he's looking, he's wanting the other brahmacharis to admire him. Oh, he's really austere. Oh, he knows so many verses. Wow. He's so many. You know, or he dresses the deities very nicely. Or he wakes up very early in the morning. I mean, we do a lot of things because of false ego.
Yeah.
Because we want profit, adoration, distinction, which is basically a sign of a sex life. So basically, tapasana yati. Or we may think that we can become Krishna conscious by taking sannyas, but it doesn't work like that. You know, I took sannyas, it didn't make me any more Krishna conscious. I mean, I took sannyas's dedication to Krishna. But actually, you know, sometimes people take sannyas just because they want mahaprasadam. In the old days, when someone took sannyas, they got all the mahaprasadam plates right after they were offered to the deities. And, you know, the brahmacharis are thinking, how nice it would be to take sannyas. You know, you get, wow, every time, six times a day, you get mahaprasadam. But if you're thinking like that, sooner or later, you're going to become a grihastha again. So in other words, none of these methods will actually help us become Krishna conscious. Taking sannyas, austerities, but only by taking the dust of a mahatsevu, we hope, mahatsevu horvi muktes. That's another instruction by Lord Vrishabhadeva. Yeah. Mahatsevu. Only by serving a pure devotee, and we're so fortunate in the Krishna conscious movement, we could serve as divine grace to the Prabhupada by staying in the movement. That was the whole point I was making at the beginning of the class. Following Lord Vrishabhadeva's instructions, cooperating with each other, staying in the Krishna consciousness movement, tolerating things, you know, it takes working with devotees. We have different mentalities, different social backgrounds, different countries. Sometimes requires a lot of toleration. I mean, sometimes jokingly I say there's fourfold miseries. Adiatmic, adibodhic, adidaivic, and adidevotiac. You understand? So we tolerate all these things and we work cooperatively, like that boat example I was given, and then we'll become Krishna conscious. It's very easy. You don't have to torture yourself like the Jains do, or like Maharaj Arhat did, or King of Kanka, Venka, and Kutuka, which is mentioned here. We simply have to serve this preaching mission of Srila Prabhupada. So, any questions or comments about these points?
Brigadier, the temperance meeting a long time ago, he mentioned something about like devotees leaving. It's not that devotees just leave ISKCON, except they're thrown out of the temple by the deities, but there's many offenses they committed.
Yeah, I mean, if someone commits offenses, they may be but then they have difficulty in their spiritual lives. That's true. I was speaking about something a little bit different than like devotees in the temple committing offenses. I was speaking about people who want to be independent and have their own movement. They want to have their own movement.
Right. Yeah.
They want to become gurus of their own movement and establish their own standards for initiation.
Yeah.
You know, you can chant four rounds a day and not work following Prabhupada's directions. Like Prabhupada said, anyone who's trying to be Krishna conscious outside of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness is living in an hallucination. That's an interesting statement. That wasn't a criticism of other organizations. That's a criticism of Prabhupada, what Prabhupada is saying about his followers. Once one has accepted Prabhupada, and he disobeys Prabhupada's instructions, nagati katopi. It doesn't matter who he's a disciple of, if he's a grand disciple or great-grand disciple or great-great-great-great-grand disciple. If anyone in the Krishna conscious movement disobeys Prabhupada, then he's living an hallucination as far as if he thinks his spiritual life is being progressive. So that was what I was commenting on. Not a devotee who committed an offense and Krishna threw him out of the movie. But even if someone commits an offense, I mean, I was thinking about this the other day, not about committing offenses, but sometimes, you know, people do leave the movement, not only because of offenses, but because of material desires. Just, you know, the bhakti, they're cultivating the bhakti lata bija. At the same time, there's other creepers that are developing and they're not attentive enough. But I was thinking how we have to be merciful enough to go after these people. You know, try to bring them back. I mean, just like even last night, I was dreaming about some disciple who had left the Krishna consciousness movement, just dreaming about bringing them back to the movement. So we should always attempt to do that. I remember I had one godbrother even who temporarily left the movement, and he started to work in a bar. Not in New Orleans, you don't know him.
Yes,
But he was working in a bar, and he was playing the piano. You know, piano bar?
Yeah.
And, you know, so what I did is I went into the piano bar to try to rescue him. And he was sitting there playing the piano, and there were like two prostitutes sitting on the piano like this, you know. Oh, you play so nicely like that. And he was playing. He was an expert musician. And then, of course, I only ordered 7-Up, so don't worry. I didn't drink any liquor. I never had my whole life. And then he finished, and he looked up. He said, "Ooh, what are you doing here?" And I said, "Come on." And then I talked about Krishna. Now he's doing well in Krishna Conscious Movement. And the other day, I had a disciple who left, and they were working in a pizza place or something, so I visited them. And so, you know, because even Jesus Christ in the Bible says, who does the shepherd think of? Does anyone know this story? Which sheep does the shepherd think of most? Nobody knows the Bible here? The sheep that has wandered off. That's what Jesus Christ said. It's an interesting statement, isn't it? So we should not be happy when someone leaves the Krishna consciousness movement. Actually, Prabhupada said we should also take some blame ourselves. You know, it's easy to say, yeah, he was offensive. He left the movement, the deities kicked him away. But we should be introspective enough to think, you know, what did I do wrong that I wasn't loving enough with this person? I was too harsh with this person, you know, and then try to figure that out and then trying to save the person. I mean, when someone would come back to Prabhupada after leaving the movement, Prabhupada would be crying and embrace them. I mean, the story is like that. So, I mean, one of our main focuses should be, there's two things Lord Chaitanya taught us as far as main things that we should focus on. One is Namaruchi and the other one is Jivadoya. Did you know this? And these are the two main teachings of Lord Chaitanya. If you have to just put it down, you know, whittle it down to the bare minimum. Namaruchi and Jivadoya. It means compassion for the jivas. And if we're not experiencing compassion, especially for the devotees or people who were acting as devotees before, then we're not making much progress in Krishna consciousness. So we should be trying to go out and bring people back. You know, and not thinking, they committed offenses, you know, haha. You know, try to bring them back. But what I was referring to was people who form their own societies or spend their time on the internet criticizing Srila Prabhupada's society. I mean, you find people who have internet sites and their whole life is just finding fault in Prabhupada's society. I mean, it's like going to the moon, or not going to the moon, or looking at the moon and just looking at the spots. I mean, when I look at the moon, it was a full moon, I think, yesterday or the day before, Purnima, right? The end of Kartik. I was thinking how beautiful the moon is. I didn't say, ew, those ugly little spots on the moon. You look at the moon and how cooling the moon shine is, isn't it? At least I do. I don't look for faults. We shouldn't be like the flies that are looking for sores, but the honeybees that are looking for the nectar. So any other questions or comments? Okay, so I think it's time. We have a big program tonight.
Yeah.
Thousands of people coming. Hear the singing? Okay.